this week's Adam Schefter podcast, we are joined by the soon-to-be free agent quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals, A.J. McCarron, who won his freedom just last week and now will have the chance to pick his new home when the new NFL league year begins in mid-March. And we'll also be joined by Frank Reich, the comeback king at Maryland, the comeback king in Buffalo, and the man that made a comeback for a head coaching job after not being interviewed at all during the initial head coaching process, but landed the Indianapolis Colts head coaching job. And of course, we'll take your voicemails on the Ask Adam weekly segment on this podcast. But first, we start with Bengals quarterback A.J. McCarron. Hello, A.J.
What's up, Adam?
It's been a busy week for you. What was it like to get that news that you'd be a UFA?
Yeah, it was, it was just unbelievable, just super exciting. Hopefully just leading to a chance to be able to compete somewhere. And my whole family, we were just really excited and blessed. And, we just can't wait for, whatever the next chapter holds for us and for that next opportunity.
How did you get the news, AJ, that you had won the grievance?
Yeah, so my lawyer called me. It was actually funny because a number I didn't even know, not the number I had for him. So I picked it up, and he said, AJ, can you hear me? And I was like, yeah. And then he said, you won. And I had to ask him again to make sure that I heard it right. And so he told me again, and I ran straight upstairs to Catherine and just looked at her and told her I won. And, she just hugged me and started crying. It was just, a special moment for us.
Were you not expecting to win the grievance? Because it seems like players have a tough time sometimes winning them.
Yeah, we thought we had a great case, and we thought it was going to be the right thing to win. But in those situations, you just never know. From talking to other guys around the league that have been through cases like that or fighting a team on something. So I think it's just one of those things you really have no control over it. So you don't know what the outcome is going to be. I think that's the most stressful part. But, we were just super glad and happy that we did get the outcome we wanted.
So now that you've won the grievance and now that you will be an unrestricted free agent on March 14th, what are you looking for in your next stop, AJ?
I think just, a chance to compete. That's all I ever wanted. Coming into Cincinnati, AD had been there for, 5 years or so. And I knew I wasn't going to, it wasn't going to be an open competition. And AD's unbelievable quarterback taught me so much, in my 4 years there. But I'm just looking for a chance to compete. That's all I want. I just want to be the guy for an organization and be able to show them what I can do and how I can lead a team and rally the guys behind me. I'm ready for that opportunity.
How hard was it to sit behind Andy Dalton and watch him all that time when you'd like a chance to compete?
Yeah, I think it's, a blessing in disguise, really, and truly, just because coming from Bama and being the guy for so long and then falling in the draft the way I did. So I think my wife said it best, it humbled me. It taught me patience more than I could ever imagine. So, but it's always tough as a competitor to sit there and see how things are going or whatever the case is and wanting your opportunity to play. But I think the biggest thing is just be ready. And when that time comes, make the most of it. And that's what I tried to do in 15 when I got that opportunity. And, we were just so close to getting sent to their first playoff win in a while. But, I think it's just it taught me a great deal of patience and and how blessed I am and we are in the league to be able to play a game for a living.
I think you have 5 NFL starts on your resume. Is that correct, AJ?
I believe maybe 4. I don't know.
Okay.
4 or 5.
4 or 5, whatever it is, whichever one, 4 or 5. What would you say to teams that are considering signing you, that have seen you play with a small body of NFL work? Why should somebody go take a chance on AJ McCarron and give him that chance to compete that we're talking about?
Well, I think you just hopefully, you know, ask maybe my teammates or the coaches I've dealt with, what type of guy I am for the locker room. I felt like in Cincinnati, I always handled everything the best way possible. But also, I think when you break down, you know, the games I started, you know, San Fran was my first start that year at San Fran. They hadn't allowed anybody over 21 points while playing at home. They actually had a pretty good defense that year. Their offense was struggling, but and we had 21 in the first half, I believe. Then turn around the next game and start Monday Night Football versus, you know, the Denver Broncos, and them having the number one defense in every category possible. And we were just so close to winning that game. And, you know, I thought I played well, definitely could have played better. But and then you turn around to the Baltimore. I thought I played well after, you know, slow start in the first quarter, and then playoff game, just kind of battling through the whole outcome. You know, that was my first ring game ever. So it took me a while to kind of get used to it and figure out what I wanted, if I wanted a glove or not. So I think it was just, you know, I think when you watch those games, you see that I just have a never give up attitude, and I always try to find, you know, a way to win. That's what I've always done. And hopefully they see that and like it and, you know, just give me a chance.
AJ, you're from Mobile. You went to the University of Alabama. Do you have any reservations or any complications about going anywhere in the country, or are you open to going anywhere? Like, there are so many teams that need quarterbacks. Buffalo, out east, northeast. Denver, out west. Arizona, out west. Jets, back east. Maybe Jacksonville, depending on what happens with Blake Bortles. There are so many teams with so many quarterback questions. Are you open to going anywhere?
Oh, of course. I mean, I would never turn down one. I mean, you're blessed enough to get an opportunity to lead an organization. I mean, you just take it and run with it and make it into something super special. And that's what I want. I just want that opportunity, you know, to help somebody win the ultimate goal and to win a Super Bowl. And that's just the opportunity I want.
You're 27 years old now. You'll be 28 years old this season. What kind of football would you tell people that you have left in front of you?
Oh, I mean, I think I have a ton of football. You know, I really haven't played a ton. I haven't taken a whole lot of hits. And my body's, I mean, I'm just stronger and feel better than I've ever felt. So, I mean, I think, you know, kind of, Tom Brady has kind of proven the thing. If you take care of your body, you can play this game for a long time. So, you know, I'm just ready for that opportunity. I really am.
Now that you have the decision from the arbitrator and you've won the grievance, what are the emotions like leading up to March? Because there's now a period of uncertainty that you enter into. What's that like for you, AJ?
Yeah, it's different. You know, of course, it's something I've never experienced before, but I really just have a good group around me, you know, from my agent to my QB coach and of course, my family. I mean, we have a small circle, and we really just try to control the things we can control, and everything will fall in place. I mean, we just can't worry about, you know, what we call mental clutter, and we just stay focused and work our butts off every day, and everything will work out.
Mental clutter, I like that expression. What does that mean?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, the outside surroundings, you know, outside of your self-belief and in your thought process on how you go about your work every day, you know, allowing other things, other factors, surrounding outside factors to, you know, kind of change, you know, however it is, however you play or however you work or go about your process every day. So we try to, you know, not to pay attention to any of that, keep that at a all-time minimum, and just stay focused on our goal.
Not to add to your mental clutter, AJ, but this is a very intriguing off-season of quarterbacks. Yourself, you're a free agent. We've got Kirk Cousins as a potential free agent. We've got Case Keenum. There are a lot of quarterbacks out there. There are a lot of quarterbacks in the draft. How much attention do you pay to what's going on with some of these other quarterbacks in their particular situations, or do you not build up that mental clutter at all and just focus in on yourself?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I truly don't. Like, I can't control what a team thinks of Kirk or Case or anybody else. So I really just focus on what I need to do day in and day out to get better, and working with my coach and really just take everything in stride. Like I said, we're just blessed to play this game, and it's just awesome to be a part of.
You talk about learning from your coaches. What did you learn from your time together with Nick Saban?
I think it's just day in and day out process. You know, I think that's what he does better than anybody in the country at being a coach, is just his daily process is unbelievable, and he works, you know, to be the best. I think, you know, a famous quote he has is he hates to lose more than he likes to win. So I think that's, you know, a good thing, and that's something I was kind of instilled in me. He instilled in me while I was there, and I just try to take it and run with it.
Did you watch the Alabama victory this past January and the new freshman quarterback, Tua?
Oh yeah, everybody was piled up in the in our house. We had our family over, and it was definitely an awesome game.
Now, what about the lessons you'll take away from Marvin Lewis?
I think, you know, just Coach Lewis was unbelievable. It was a really awesome situation to be brought into, truthfully, because coming from Bama with everything, you know, it's more strict. Everything's set for you on your day-to-day process. And coming into, you know, Coach Lewis to be able to play for him, it was, you know, be a grown man, handle everything on your own. So I really got to see both sides of it and really try to work my way into, you know, finding a happy medium.
Yeah.
And so I think it was just it was an unbelievable time for me to be able to play for Coach Lewis on for those 4 years.
You know, now that you lay it out like this, I'm thinking about it. You fell to the fifth round of the draft in 2014, AJ. You came on and you almost helped Cincinnati win its first playoff game under Marvin. That didn't happen. You waited behind Andy all this time. You were almost traded to Cleveland, and that didn't happen. You were forced to continue to wait even more. Really, all along the way, it seems like there's been a lot of setbacks, waiting, patience, things haven't gone the way that you wanted. Do you feel like now you're at the point where all this is ready to come together for you and finally go the way you want it to go?
Well, you hope so, but, you know, like I've said, this whole process is, you know, us as humans, I've learned, and that's why I said it was such a blessing in disguise to actually fall late in the draft and be put in the situation I was in, because it taught me to be humble and to realize how blessed we are to play this game. But, us as humans, back to what I was saying, like us as humans, you know, want everything to happen on our own time, you know, whether it's making money or buying a new car or buying a new house or whatever it is you want, rather than realizing it's on God's time. Like his plan will work out when he wants it to work out. And that's hard to see as a human, and because you want something when you want it. But I really truly believe, like, this whole process just taught me, like you said, taught me patience, humbleness, and just back to just loving the game and taking everything in stride. And I mean, I'm just so ready. I just want that opportunity, and I really can't wait. But hopefully, yeah, like you said, hopefully everything turns around for me, and it finally all the chips fall in place, and somebody just gives me that opportunity and lets me show that I won't let them down, and they won't be wrong for making that decision.
Dare to venture any guesses, AJ, on what God's plan is for you here in the coming weeks?
No, that's one of the things my wife always says. We, you know, family members, of course, say, oh, I heard this. My wife kind of just leans over to me and, hey, just realize it's God's plan. Like, we'll fall where we need to fall, where he wants us to fall, and then we'll take it from there and run with it. So, I have no clue. I'm just working my butt off and ready for this opportunity.
Hey, AJ, really appreciate you taking some time. Thank you very much, and good luck in the weeks ahead.
Yep, I appreciate it, Adam. Thank you for having me.
Frank?
Adam, how you doing?
Thank you very much for taking some time. I appreciate it. Congratulations on everything that's happened here the last week.
It's been a whirlwind.
You know, what has this whole week been like? Because I would venture to say, without knowing, that you've never experienced a week quite like this one in your entire life.
Well, it has been. It's been special. I'll tell you what makes it special is the people. I mean, you know, coming from, winning a world championship there in Philadelphia, and, you know, what a great accomplishment that was, and doing something special for the city of Philadelphia. But it really all came down to, you know, the people there, starting from the top, Mr. Lurie and Howie and Coach Peterson, and the players just made it really special. I mean, just going to work, and it was just an absolute blast. And then, you know, and to culminate that with winning a world championship. But then for me, to get the opportunity to come back where I got my coaching roots started here in Indianapolis for this organization, for Mr. Irsay and his family, I mean, this is the place that I would want to be. To get this opportunity at this place where I got my start with this team and this city is about as good as it can get.
Frank, is there any part of you that when the coaching interview process is underway, you don't get called from anybody? Am I correct?
Yeah, no. I mean, I was full steam ahead, and it was just focused on the playoffs, and, you know, kind of went dark, as they would say. And that's the way you do it in this business. You know, you take care of your job and you do your work, and if something comes your way, great. But I was very happy doing what I was doing.
But it's strange because we heard about Jim Schwartz and the Giants and the Cardinals, and we heard about John DeFilippo with the Bears and the Cardinals, and we didn't hear Frank Reich, even though you started your coaching career in Indianapolis and the Colts had an opening, and they didn't even come to call you. Now, again, Chris Ballard said after your press conference that as he was talking to you, he couldn't believe that he didn't even talk to you during the process. He felt so dumb and ridiculous not having spoken to you. Was there any part of you that was insulted or hurt or bothered that other people are getting interviews and you're just going along doing your job?
Yeah, not even close. Not even close. I love what I was doing. And, you know, I've just always learned and respected and appreciated the process. I've always learned and appreciated that, you know, do your job, do it the right way, take care of your business the right way. And, you know, hopefully you get an opportunity. Hopefully people recognize that. Hopefully things happen for a reason. I've just seen time and time again, certainly in my own career, mm-hmm. but in other people's careers as well, you know, good and bad things happen. And I just know that it's all about the way you do it and do a great job where you're at. And hopefully those opportunities come.
You brought up starting your coaching career in Indianapolis as a Colts offensive assistant, a Colts intern in 2006, 2007, before you became the Colts offensive assistant. What did you remember about coaching in Indianapolis back then?
Well, what a great opportunity to break in as a coach under leadership of Bill Polian and Tony Dungy. You know, that was as good as it could get. Two Hall of Famers. I mean, to come in as a coach under two Hall of Famers, and then to come in and, as a coach and be able to work with a quarterback like Peyton Manning, I mean, you want to talk about getting put on the fast track of learning what it takes to create a world-class culture, winning culture, how to lead men, how to approach your work every day. It was the best spot in the world to be.
What do you remember of Mr. Irsay from back then?
Just a real commitment to winning, a commitment, a family atmosphere, really wanting to do something, special for the city, creating what would be referred to as a horseshoe culture. Mm-hmm. And that was all very evident very quickly.
You brought up all those quarterbacks there, Frank. And going back to your college days, you were around Boomer Esiason. Then you were around Jim Kelly in Buffalo. Then you were around Peyton Manning coaching him in Indianapolis. Philip Rivers out in San Diego. Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. Is there any thread that binds these great quarterbacks together through the years?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are, I feel like, to be around those quality of players has really been a great opportunity to learn and grow. I think there's several threads. One is they just have this X factor of leadership that, they're a leader amongst leaders. They step onto the field. They step into a meeting room. They have something about a juice. They have it's not charisma. It's just some innate instinct that people gravitate towards them. And that really comes from a couple different things. First of all, it comes from being a great player, from being able to do things on the football field, that not many people can do. And certainly all of those players that you mentioned, Adam, all have physical traits that are just unique and that put them at the very top. But it's not just about that. They have, the other thing is just this competitive mindset, this will to win, this tenacity, this mental toughness. Really that would be it. That would be the mental toughness to be able to bounce back from the tough games, because even the great ones have those tough games. There's just a mental toughness, to get better. Really that would be the other one. They're all great. They all know how to practice. They all come to work. They all prepare. Those are the things I think I've seen.
When we talk about mental toughness, I'm old enough to realize this, maybe others are not, but you were the quarterback that led arguably the greatest college comeback of all time back in November of 1984. You were down 31-0 against Miami. Your team came back and won 42-40. And then you were the quarterback in the most noted comeback playoff victory in NFL history, maybe other than the Patriots and Falcons, 32-point comeback in the 92 wild card game versus the Oilers. What is it about the fact that you quarterbacked those two comebacks when we talk about mental toughness? How is it that you were able to do both of those, and what does that say about you?
Well, it says that I was on a couple good teams that had really strong leadership, starting from the head coaching position. When I was in college, Bobby Ross was the head coach, and you want to talk about mental toughness. There are a few people that have that, and I think he instilled that into our team. And as the quarterback on that team, that's certainly a key position. But I think it started, I think it started from the top in our head coach. I thought he exuded a mental toughness that carried over our team, and there was a really an unselfishness. And the same thing was true in Buffalo. Marv Levy, a Hall of Fame coach. I had the good pleasure of speaking to him the other day again on the phone. And he's just an incredible human being. You want to talk about a guy who's mentally tough. Those two coaches right there, I think they instilled that in our teams that were able to have those great comebacks.
You mentioned speaking to Marv on the phone the other day. What did he tell you, Frank?
You know what? Words cannot even begin to describe what a class act he is. He's got this Hall of Fame career, and I'm calling him, and I genuinely feel like, however old Marv is, like he was happier for me and just more satisfied for me and my family that this has come to pass. This is something he had always talked to me about. I said, Frank, one day you're going to be a head coach in the NFL. He and Bill Polian, those two guys, even from my early years in Buffalo, would always tell me, Frank, you're going to be a coach. You're going to be a head coach in the NFL one day. And they've always believed in me. And then his sense of humor. I called him the other day, and I kind of joked with him about, Coach, I was thinking about asking you to come back and be the offensive coordinator. and you know what he said? This is classic Marv. He's so the wittiest man I ever know. You know what he says? I'd be offensive, all right.
Right away. That's a good Marv Levy response.
That is classic Marv Levy right there. The funniest and quickest wit, even at the age he's at right now. I love that man. He's tremendous.
What did you learn from Bill Polian as well?
Well, Bill Polian is, to me, besides my biological father, okay, and as much as I've learned from Marv, Bill Polian is my football father. I mean, I literally owe everything in my football career to Bill. Bill drafted me in 1985 to the Buffalo Bills. Bill told me after my rookie year in 1985, he said, Frank, you're going to play as many years as you can, and then I want you to come coach for me. And then you're going to end up being a head coach in this league one day. And sure enough, I retire. He gives me my first start. He drafts me in 1985. He and Tony Dungy give me my first coaching job. Bill has been a steady football influence in my life since 1985. And, I owe so much to him. And, he's just very meaningful to me.
It's amazing to me, though, Frank, and I don't mean to come back to this and harp on this, but you've got Marv Levy behind you telling you that you're going to be a head coach one day. You've got Bill Polian, who is telling you that you're going to be a head coach one day. Both men are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Both have strong NFL connections, and yet Indianapolis didn't even look at you in the first round of interviews. Did you ever think that this was passing you by? I know you weren't focusing in on that, but did you think that this opportunity would come in a way that both those Hall of Fame men had told you it would?
I didn't know. There's no guarantees. One thing I do know, there's no guarantees. And I never felt like anybody owed me anything. I never felt like the NFL owed me this opportunity. I was given an opportunity as a player and as a coach to go do what I like to do. And, and that's to compete around a common goal and to try to win a world championship and to do it with guys who have a love and passion for football and each other. And there are no guarantees. But I always believed deep down that it was going to happen. I always believed. I always kind of had this thought, this vision, this was going to happen. But one thing I learned, Adam, early on was you can't manipulate it. You can't force it. That it came. No one could have ever thought that it would come the way it came. And in hindsight, it came the best way, in a way that I couldn't predict or imagine.
Why the best way?
That, for me personally, just to know that, that being a man of faith and just believing that all things work together, for in ways that we don't understand everything that's being pulled and for things to happen like this. And for me, that's what made it more meaningful.
You win the Super Bowl that Sunday. I believe the Colts called you that Tuesday. What was it like to get the phone call from them, and what was your reaction to it at that point in time? Because it was a very topsy-turvy process, thanks to all the circumstances surrounding it.
Yeah, it was crazy because, as you said, Adam, we win the Super Bowl. That feeling was unlike anything I'd ever experienced in football. And now it's Monday, Tuesday, and you know how coaches are. I mean, we're already thinking about, okay, we got to go back and win next year. And I'm sitting in bed. It's actually late Tuesday, I believe, and when I see the news break that that Josh was not going to take the job, and my wife and I stand there and look at each other and we're like, well, what are we going to do anything? And I told my wife, I said, nope, I'm not going to make a phone call. I'm not going to call my agent. Yes, do I want this job? Yes, I do. This is the job I would want. I mean, yeah. If I could draw it up, this would be it. But you can't force it. And so we'll just wait it out and see what happens. And thankfully that night I got a call from Chris Ballard, and that was a good deal.
You know what I learned through the years, Frank? When you look for jobs, they rarely come to you. But when you don't look for them, they often come to you.
Yeah, and, it took me a while to learn that lesson. But this time it seemed to work out that way.
And then you interview with the Colts last Friday, the day after the parade. And I was told that went 10 hours. What stood out to you about that process?
That 5, 10, 15 minutes into it, I felt a very strong connection with Chris Ballard, with the whole organization. Obviously, I knew a lot of the people here, sitting in the interview with people I already knew. But obviously with Chris, it was the first time that he and I ever sat down and understanding how important the relationship between head coach and GM is. I mean, it's critical. And before I got to the interview, obviously, like a good coach and quarterback, I would want to be prepared. So I did some homework on Chris Ballard, and literally every person I called said, Frank, you couldn't be with a better GM as far as a person, character, integrity, but not just character, integrity, but, you know, really talented evaluator and strong leader. That became very evident to me very quickly in the interview process that if this were going to work out, being paired with Chris would be as good as it could get.
And he was concerned, I think. There were people who felt he was concerned about losing his job after the Josh McDaniels incident. And the truth of the matter is the strength of his character and the amount of his talents are such that I don't believe that ever would have been the case that he would have been in danger. But there were people who said that, which I found laughable. So when you get the call last weekend, Frank, finally, that the Colts want to hire you, that they're going to hire you, what was that like? Because if we all go back to moments in our life when we get a dream job, you can remember so many circumstances around it. What was that like for you last weekend?
Well, you know, it didn't hit me really right away because I knew that there were a couple other people going to be interviewed, you know, Dan Campbell and Leslie Frazier. You know, I've only met Dan once or twice, but no, he's an excellent football coach and a good person. Leslie, I know a little bit better and have the absolute highest regard for. So, one thing I've learned in this business is you don't ever take anything for granted. I mean, and you're not the head coach until the contract is literally signed and sealed. And so I didn't take it for granted. I was appreciative of the opportunity to come in and interview and felt like that went exceedingly well. But then when it hit me was, you know, after, you know, I got the phone call where Chris called me and said, Frank, you know, want you to be the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. That was incredible, but it was really the next day when my wife and I flew up to Indianapolis. We got off the Mr. Irsay's plane. Mm-hmm. They took us to his house. All of his family was there. Some of the Colts family was there. My wife and I were there. And sitting there in Mr. Irsay's house, signing the contract, it just felt right. Everything about it felt right. It was like it was a family gathering. That's a day I will never forget.
Had you ever been there as an assistant coach to the Irsay house?
No, I just driven by a few times. I actually lived only a couple miles away, and you know, every now and then would drive by, but that was my first time actually in the house.
Hey, Frank, congratulations on everything. I appreciate taking the time to join us. Everything that you said, I'm just listening to your answers, and I'm saying this is exactly why people say what they do about you and why you got this job, because these are the things that come to people who work hard and wait and are patient and don't force the issue. And the way you answer those questions, I'm just telling you, I could see right away why everybody speaks about you the way they do.
Thank you, Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam. We should ask Adam.
Always love when the listeners get to ask you some questions, Adam. Let's get it started with the voicemails this week.
Hi, Adam. This is Marco Imperati. I'm a lifetime Giants fan. My question is about Davis Webb. I'm curious what the team thinks of Davis Webb, and do they think enough of him to pass on a quarterback at number two?
Marco, I don't think that Davis Webb's presence factors into what the Giants are doing at two. You go and take the guy that you believe is the best guy. If you think one of those quarterbacks, be it Sam Darnold or Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield, is the guy at number two, you go take him. If you think that Saquon Barkley is there, and let me say this, I've spoken to enough evaluators who believe he is the top-rated player in this draft, and he's there at two because the Browns went quarterback, you go take him. But you don't make a decision based on a guy that this head coach and this GM did not draft in the first place. And that's not to say that Davis Webb won't have a good NFL future one day. He might, but they don't know. And they can't bring him in and look at him much before the draft because they'll have limited work opportunities. So, again, he was somebody that Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo drafted. He was not drafted by this regime, and that's why I don't believe he factors into what they do with two, Marco.
Quarterbacks are always the biggest questions in the offseason, Adam, and we got a really interesting one about a team in the NFC West.
Hey, Adam, this is Eric from Auburn, Washington. Look, here's my question. Are the Seahawks better if we trade Russ to Cleveland for the 1-4, take a combination of Barkley with Quentin Nelson if we're able to sign Kirk Cousins? I think it's interesting. I think it's maybe a possibility. And honestly, not that I think Russ is better than Kirk, but I think all around it makes us a better team. What are your thoughts?
Well, Eric, it's a really interesting idea. I have not heard it anywhere else. It's the first time I've heard Russell Wilson being shipped to Cleveland for a 1-4. The 1-4 picks. If I were the Browns, I don't know how I'd feel about doing that. And if I were the Seahawks, I don't know how I feel about doing that. And so when you put the two together, I don't see either side being willing to do that. But it is certainly interesting to talk about. Look, when you trade Russell Wilson, you're trading a guy in a contract that becomes expensive. And the players the Browns pick at 1-4 are financial bargains. That's what rookies are. But of course, you don't even know what you're going to get back. So say the Seahawks go quarterback and Barkley, or whoever they go with, 1-4. They go a quarterback and Minka Fitzpatrick. You pick the guys that they want to go with. There's not a certainty that that guy's going to connect. Plus, you've got an aging defense, and the window's shrinking there to win. So you want to win now. So is the rookie quarterback going to give you the best chance to win with an aging defense now? And if you're the Browns, is your roster ready and willing and able to win with a guy like Russell Wilson right now, who's probably entering the prime of his career? Or do you want to start from the ground up and build a winner and have that winner be able to withstand the next 10, 12 years of challenges in the AFC North? So, again, it's an interesting idea. It actually makes some sense, but I don't think it's going to happen for either team, Eric. Sorry.
Moral of the story, neither team really benefits from it.
No.
So why not, right?
Yeah, I don't see it, but it's interesting fodder from Eric.
It is. A team that is ready to compete and hopefully take the next step, the New Orleans Saints, which brings us to this call.
Hi, Adam. My name is Jordan, and I just want to know what you think is the Saints' biggest piece that they're missing right now that would help them be a true Super Bowl contender, and how they could achieve that and gain that piece in the offseason.
Well, Jordan, I think one of the things that they do need is they need a playmaking tight end. You know, Jimmy Graham for a long time was that kind of guy. And Jimmy Graham is going to be a free agent this offseason. And I expect the Saints to have some interest in bringing Jimmy Graham back to New Orleans. But the problem is that he played so well for Seattle this year that I think that other teams will be willing to pay more than New Orleans is for Jimmy Graham. That would be one place that I could see the Saints having a need. Plus, then if we want to go beyond that, they could use another pass rusher. They could use another defensive back. But look, they had an incredible draft last year. And I will say this to you, Jordan. If the Saints can have the same kind of draft this year that they did last year, they plug in players and they'll be a Super Bowl contender next year.
And for years to come after that. If they can duplicate what they did in last year's draft, Yeah. Wow.
You know, the other thing they got to draft, they probably got to draft a quarterback too here. Is Drew Brees going to play 5 more years? I don't know about that. Are we going to get 2-3 more years out of Drew Brees? I would think we probably will. But that actually would take you to the end of a guy you drafted in the second, third, fourth round where he had 4 years in his contract. So to me, I think a quarterback somewhere along the way has got to be appealing.
Let's close it out with this question.
Hey, Adam, it's Jaron. I was wondering, what are the chances the Ravens end up signing Jarvis Landry?
Well, Darren, I think that's the team that everybody is going to be connecting to Jarvis Landry going in. Now, the Ravens need to upgrade at wide receiver. There have been some trade discussions between those two teams last year. I don't know who initiated those talks. And if the Dolphins don't tag Jarvis Landry, and I don't know that they will, and he does hit the market, I mean, that's the first place you think of, Baltimore, right? So we'll see whether Baltimore can get that done. We'll see whether Landry doesn't have the franchise or transition tag on him. We'll see whether or not there's not another team that steps up to go sign him, because when you look at the free agent wide receivers this offseason, Jarvis Landry probably is going to be the best one of the bunch there, Darren. So Baltimore is in that market. He would make sense. He would fit what they do. Tough, tough player. I mean, that's a marriage waiting to happen, but there's still some steps that have to be taken before we get there.
Quick, direct, to the point. Nice question from Darren. Nice question from everybody who submitted voicemails this week, and you can do the same. Just give us a call, 860-506-5779. Make sure you leave your name and your Ask Adam question for a chance to get on the show.
Thanks to my producer, Josh Macri, for organizing those Ask Adam questions. Thank you, the listeners, for leaving those voicemails. We invite you to leave more next week. And thank you very much to A.J. McCarron, who joined us to talk about what's ahead for him, Frank Reich, to talk about what just went on with him. And for everybody who listened in to the Adam Schefter podcast, we'll be back next week in the Indianapolis Scouting Combine coming up. Thanks for listening this time, everybody.